The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this machine and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Start 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Sunday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston, and thanks for tuning in today. A quick note, we're on the 60-minute format today with our guest, Carrie Krukel. So pay attention to the time, and if you have a question that you want to get in via either email or our toll-free phone number, please plan it so that you don't miss the show. So again, 60-minute format and no break. For those of you who do want to call us today, it is area code 866, toll-free, 866-687-7223. And remember, there are no call screeners, so be patient, and I'll get you up on the line as quickly as possible. You can also email us at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then you can use our blog as well, which is thespaceshow.com. All the way over to the far right are the upcoming show menu items. This is the first show listed, which is our archive page for the program. So please open it up, and then when you go to the bottom, it has a place for comments and questions. And as soon as you post a comment or question, I will get a copy of it and can bring it up on the show. But again, our preferred way of talking with you, the listener, is via the toll-free number 1-866-687-7223. Real quickly, the newsletter for the week will be up on the website after today's program. So please pay attention to it. We've got great programming planned for you. And we have updated the upcoming shows. So we have just, I believe, 2 dates left in November that we're booking, and then just a few more than that in December. And then I'm about to start the first quarter of 2018, which seems unbelievable to me. The time has gone by so quickly. Everything we do is archived, so you can listen right off of our website or very rapidly download the programs. Don't forget our store in the upper left corner under support. And in addition, don't forget the Listen Live button with all of the instructions for listening live to archived programs, podcasts. And for those of you who listen to Alexa, we have the TuneIn player there, so you can listen to Alexa as well. To me, the most important buttons are the Support the Space Show. So remember, we are a 501c3 nonprofit with One Giant Leap Foundation. And we bring you these programs because many of you do financially support the show, and that keeps us going, and we're definitely appreciative of that. And we thank you for that. We also have corporate sponsors. We're opening that up for 2018. But you'll see their banner ads running across our homepage. In addition, corporate sponsors get a short promo spot on each show read aloud. Although when we do the 60-minute format shows, I simply thank our corporate sponsors for their great support. So I do want to thank our corporate sponsors as we are on the 60-minute format. So the New Worlds Conference, which is November 10th through the 11th, wow, just around the corner for that too. Austin, Texas, and their website is newworlds2017.space. And also the Integrated Space Plan. Their website is thespaceplan.com. The Space Foundation with their 34th Symposium, which is in April in Colorado Springs. And their website, spacesymposium.org. Orbital ATK is a sponsor, and we greatly appreciate their continued support. AIAA, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. Check them out at AIAA.org. And then Celestis, which is still the only proven provider of Memorial Spaceflight Services in the world. They have lots of different ways for you to remember loved ones who had an interest in space, or perhaps you think should have an interest in space, as well as yourself. You can now send your own DNA along with your loved one, or just on your own. So their website, Celestis, CELESTIS.com, for all the information you need on that. And that brings me to our program today, and I'm very happy to bring back Carrie Kuchel, who in a previous life was a professional ballet dancer. She's also an engineer, and she has come to the intersection of art and science, having trained in dance with the Royal Winnipeg Ballet, Joffrey Ballet, and others. And she does bioelectrical engineering work with a bioelectrical engineering degree after receiving the Freshman Engineering Alumni and Advanced Micro Device Design Awards. And you can see her full bio on the website, so I advise you to check that out. She's done incredible things in the art world and in her science and bioengineering world. And she has this incredible film festival that we have been reporting on for the past couple of years, and I attended last year and will be attending this year, which I wish all of you would attend. It is really fun and informative and interesting with great people. Raw Science TV and the Raw Science Film Festival. Carrie, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good, and it's great to have you back on. What's new for the film festival for 2017, which will actually be held in early 2018?
Yes. Well, I should point out that we have a website that kind of explains what's going on, and it is rawsciencefilmfestival.tv. This year, it has certainly grown. By 2018, we are eligible to be qualifiers for the Academy Awards, so we're sneaking up on that and growing the festival as we get there. And this year, it will be in Santa Barbara. We have a lot of amazing speakers coming in from around the world, and several that are space-related that I think this audience would enjoy, for sure.
So because you're holding it in January in Santa Barbara, does that mean that this year's contestants will be eligible for the Academy Awards?
No, this festival will be hopefully be able to make the announcement at this festival or after, but it will be for the next one.
For the next one. Okay, so tell us about who some of the speakers and what the program is going to be like.
Well, the program this year, the theme of the live event, for the festival submissions, any science or tech-related film is eligible to be submitted. But the live event, the theme is the 100-year birthday of Arthur C. Clarke. So there's a heavy emphasis on space technology, AI, satellites, things that Arthur C. Clarke envisioned in his work. And we have several amazing people in various related industries coming. I can give a little rundown. Yuri Lunchakov, who is the head of cosmonaut training in Star City, will be coming to give a speech about space diplomacy and bring a photo exhibit about with photos of Earth from space. It's called Let Me Show You Earth. Kip Thorne, the astrophysicist who recently won a Nobel Prize for his role in discovering gravity waves, he usually comes every year. This year, he will be in Hawaii. We changed the date of the festival from December to January, but he's actually going to roll in on a beam robot for an hour and attend the festival and give his speech. Esther Dyson, a famous backup cosmonaut, will be there, and she's actually auctioning off her zero-G suit for us so we can use the proceeds to benefit the Afghan Girls Robot Team, which I can give more information on. We have Richard Garwin, the designer of the hydrogen bomb, will be there speaking. Garrett Reisman, who is a former NASA astronaut and is head of crew at SpaceX currently. And that's a selection.
The designer of the hydrogen bomb is going to be there?
Yes, Richard Garwin, Dick Garwin. Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting topic and discussion, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
So it's one day, right, or one evening? Logistics, what is it?
Yeah, so this year we expanded a little bit. Friday night is a VIP cocktail night that you can purchase tickets to. Saturday we have winning films screening all day. And then we have a red carpet award, Academy Award style award ceremony Saturday night. And then Sunday, one of the things that we received a lot of feedback on last year is people kept using the word inspired, because the speakers and the content, the subject matter were very inspirational. So this year we decided to capture that, and on Sunday we will be having workshops that relate to how to tell the science, the stories of science better and engage people with art and science.
So is registration and attendance, is everything open now, or is it still pending?
It's going to be open fairly soon, hopefully in about a week. In the meantime, if people want to stay notified when it is open, if you go to rawsciencefilmfestival.tv, you can join the forum where announcements are made, and as soon as the announcement happens in about a week, we'll be able to post there when the tickets open.
Where is the Granada Theater in Santa Barbara?
It's downtown Santa Barbara, not far from the water, as downtown Santa Barbara is, and it's on Main Street, right in the middle of it.
So this is a picture of it on your website?
Yes.
My son went to Santa Barbara for 4 years, and I never knew this was there. Interesting. But I didn't get very far out of Goleta, because that's where he always hung out, and that's where the university is. But
yes, I should point out that we have two co-producers this year, Will Nix and Michelle McIntosh. And Michelle McIntosh is based in Santa Barbara. She's affiliated with the film school there as well, and we're going to be getting them involved.
Terrific. Are you taking selections? Have you decided on selections yet? What is that process like?
It's still open for entry. We have not announced the official selections yet, but so far we have about 85, and it's open for submission until November 1st. We have four broad categories: youth, amateur, student, and professional.
Youth, amateur,
student, filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Student and student filmmakers are any age, or are they broken down like high school and college or something like that?
The student filmmakers are any age, but they have to belong to an accredited film studies program. However, we do have an amateur category for people that make films that are not, formal film students.
Let me get this straight. So you're still open for selections, but you haven't started taking the selections yet. Is that right?
We've been in the background. We've been making official selections. We haven't made announcements yet, and we're still in the process of accepting films until November 1st. And then right after that, we'll make official selection announcements.
So there's very short time if you want to get your film entered and considered, correct?
Yes. Yes. And we do have cash prizes this year, and also a very special award that is being 3D printed by D-Shape, and it will be a very nice trophy this year.
Cool. So can you tell us anything about what you're seeing as entries yet? I know it's science, too, so what's the percentage of, say, space versus just science?
Strangely, normally we get a lot more science-focused film. This year, I would say it's about 25%. There are films on the gravity wave detection, space travel in general, some sci-fi that's space-related. But this year it's about 25%.
But space is part of the science group. There's not a special grouping for space, right?
No. It's wide open for any science or tech. We separate it by the categories I mentioned previously, plus documentary or dramatic. And then I should point out we also have industry awards. So we give – it's all on Film Freeway where the submissions are. And we have several industry awards categories, and any film is eligible, but normally it's like studio release films or online episodes from, you know, like Netflix or production studios. But I should point that out as well.
Did anything come in from CBS's Salvation series that they ran during the summer?
Not yet. We would love to have that.
I guess one of the few who watched it, but I really enjoyed the series except for the ending, which I thought they could have done a lot better. But especially their description of how M-Drive worked. I thought that that was one of the best I've ever seen. So, I don't know if you saw the series, but it was a really fun series. But they really did a great job on their one episode explaining how M-Drive worked.
Well, we would love to have that submitted, and there's a whole section of the film festival that's dedicated to interstellar travel, the live event that Kip Thorne is part of. There's a group at UCSB that is working on directed energy propulsion programs related to, like, Breakthrough Starshot, where they're sending chips to Alpha Centauri at, I think, something like 25% the speed of light.
Right. You had Dr. Lubin on last year. He's not speaking this year, though, is he?
He's on a panel this year. We have Miles from Tomorrowland coming, related to NASA's, I think it's Innovative Advanced Concepts will be there. It's basically NASA Starlight, and Philip Lubin Group will all be there speaking on a panel.
What I'm seeing year to year is that you're expanding and growing, and the people getting involved are expanding and growing for you as well. So obviously you're catching on, and you're picking up the buzz, so to speak, from the industry.
Yes. And there are a couple other things I can announce for this year as well, but if...
Well, announce them.
Okay. It's fun. I wanted to give a shout out to the Labo-M dancers from UCSB, from Santa Barbara, because they will be performing. And also, there will be a segment dedicated to Stanislav Petrov, who is the man that saved us from nuclear war in 1983 when the Soviet Union thought that the U.S. had launched ICBMs. He unfortunately was going to come and speak, and unfortunately he passed away in May. So instead we're celebrating The Man Who Saved the World, which is a wonderful feature-length documentary about him and his experience. And we'll talk about that with Richard Garwin as well, the designer of the hydrogen bomb. And we're very excited to have Roya Mahboob and the Afghan Girls Robot Team will be traveling and designing a new type of robot that does farm work, and they will be attending from Afghanistan, and we're really excited to welcome them there.
How do you find out about these people? Do you have a whole advisory group that tells you all sorts of cool things and people that are around?
We have different advisors. I spend a lot of time, like, caring and looking for things, and finding people that know them. But we do have an advisory board that helps, make connections and things like that. William Nix is on the advisory, Mitchell Block, Peter Samuelson, but mostly all those things that I mentioned are just things I learned about and thought would be really important to celebrate.
Are you seeing a big change in the direction of the film festival from year to year? Is it... are you shaping it into maybe a modified direction, or are you sticking with the original plans? How is it evolving?
Well, the original plan was to really just share and celebrate the best science stories and, become a platform that would be like the Academy Awards and kind of disrupt the popular culture awards cycles. And I think we are staying true to that vision and being able to utilize art and film to, to tell these stories. Where we're expanding more, two things. Number one, we are starting to now be able to provide opportunities for young people and independent filmmakers. For example, this year, Nokia Bell Labs, which you would greatly appreciate as they helped the first men walk on the moon with their communication system, in the Apollo program, They have a very special engineering experiments and art and technology program at their headquarters in Murray Hill, New Jersey, outside of New York. It's a long, decades-old program where many famous artists have participated and done great work with them. And we now have a fellowship for selected winner of the festival will get a fellowship of a cash prize and a summer internship in their experiments in art and technology program. So one way we've expanded is like really giving them tangible opportunities to grow. And then the second is we would really like the bigger overall vision that has stayed true to the original but is kind of coming to fruition is we would like to be sort of like the Comic-Con for science and tech and film, where we not only screen films, but we have, you know, a large array of panels and workshops and ways that people can engage. And whether they're trainer sessions where we train educators so they can figure out, like, how do I bring, you know, how do I help my students with this? Or any, you know, Hollywood and science panels. There's a lot I can go into some of those workshops, but that's one way that it's really expanded and that we hope by, say, 2019, that it could be on the magnitude of a Comic-Con.
Is Santa Barbara going to be your new home? Are you planning to return to Fox Studios, or are you going to move it around a little bit?
We loved Fox Studios, and they were so generous to have us there last year, and it is great to be in Hollywood. We're going to see how it goes this year. It might be kind of nice to pick one place and stay there and sort of be like a destination festival, like Sundance has always been, you know, Park City. We're going to see how it works and how many people we can get to Santa Barbara and maybe stay there.
You have a logistics question from Shirley, and Shirley's in Las Vegas and said, what are the logistics? Do you have an event hotel? Are you independent and on your own while you're there? Is it treated like a sort of a normal conference? Can you sort of talk about the logistics and how it works for people attending?
Yes. So the people that are attending, I can say a hotel name just because anyone can make a reservation at any time, and I think they'd be happy to have us say it. There's a hotel called the Canary Hotel where we're getting significant discounts for people that reserve through the festival. It's about a 2-block walk from the festival itself, theater.
Did you say Canary like the bird?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Canary like the bird, the Canary Hotel.
Okay.
And it's a really beautiful hotel. It's a great place if someone's traveling in from out of town to be. And there are a few others in the area as well. I think we may fill them. So there's definitely accommodations. We're trying to work out where people can shuttle potentially from Los Angeles. There's a train in Santa Barbara, so people can take the train from San Francisco or LA. We do have a fairly well curated experience. If someone buys the package of tickets for the whole weekend, it's not very expensive, and we have a VIP night where they have food and hors d'oeuvres, and drinks, and we kind of, you know, have a really well scheduled event for the whole weekend. In fact, I'm hoping that we're able to do this, but one of the things we're working on is getting a water ski section so someone could actually water ski up the coast and arrive at the event from the ocean.
Well, that's wishful thinking.
Well, we actually have it. The person has tried it out already, and we have, like, drones that are filming.
So they take off in a boat, I guess, someplace from Santa Barbara or the area, and then they come into the Santa Barbara Pier. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's kind of silly and fun, but, like, people actually have tried it already wearing tuxedo, and we're like...
I think they're imitating a James Bond movie,
it's fun.
Can you register? I'm looking on your website. Is there a hotel registration and conference registration on your event registration on your website? I'm looking to find up for it.
So there will be. There's something we have to get through logistically in the next week that we will. And there will be a link for tickets up on the site. And then in addition to tickets, there's like a package you can purchase. You have to call the hotel directly, but the information will be all on our site for that.
Okay.
You can actually, and then Granada Theater is where the ticketing officially goes through, but we'll have links, so it will all be up there.
So we should watch your website over the next week or so to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, watch it or log into the forum, and they'll get notifications from the forum.
Do you, once you have selected the films, will they be appearing on your website as well?
Well, a fun thing that we're doing this year, and it's a mad dash to get it all done, but there's a new app that has been developed and a new website. So we kind of want to be like Vice meets Netflix for science and tech, where you can get news and information as well as a video on demand stream for the channel. And we've developed a new website and a new app so that someone could subscribe and see all these films. So that should be out by the time of the festival.
Okay, so it's not up on the website yet then?
No, no. We've developed it, and now we're integrating the front end, so it'll take a little time, but our goal is to have it up and running before the time of the festival.
Are you, last year you premiered a movie soon to be released but had not yet been released. Are you going to do the same thing?
We may. We are looking into those options. There's also other films that we may be screening during the daytime there. So we can't announce yet what that film will be, but we are looking into it. And there are some pretty interesting submissions, too.
So this is Barbara in Seattle, and she says, are there ways other than submitting a film for people to participate? Also, if I know of a film or something I've seen, can I submit it, or does the person who owns the film have to submit it?
The person who owns it, the rights to distribute it, ultimately has to submit it, but you can nominate them, and the nominator can either contact them directly or just nominate to us, you know, via contact form, and we will reach out to them and see if they're interested in submitting.
So, for example, since you also cover science, I was recently at a Stanford University gene editing and genetics panel for gene editing with cystic fibrosis. But the guy doing the research, who is a Cal researcher, UC Cal, he had one of the greatest short segments I have ever seen explaining how CRISPR works with gene editing. I mean, this was an amazing animated kind of a short thing in his presentation, which he wouldn't submit, obviously. But I was thinking of either nominating that and having him cut that out of his cystic fibrosis presentation. I mean, this was an amazing, everyone in the room could understand CRISPR after after that segment that he had in there. And the other speakers even deferred to it and didn't show their CRISPR parts. They said they couldn't touch it. It was so good. So that falls into the category of science, obviously. So would it be appropriate for me to nominate this information or try to get the guy to do it? The researcher who probably owns it with his lab.
Yeah. I wonder, there is someone that submitted a CRISPR film. I wonder if it is that. I'll have to look through. We do have a CRISPR submission. But to answer your question, you really can do either. In the forum section, people who join the forum on the website, you can nominate things there, post messages, we'll check it. And even just posting on that forum an idea kind of like nominates a film, and then we go reach out. But you're more than welcome to reach out to that director directly and nominate on their behalf. In fact, they may allow you to, you know, submit it on the website. The only problem is they have to upload the file. So,
It. And they'd also probably have to edit that part out of their overall cystic fibrosis presentation, because I don't think that it, I don't know, maybe their whole presentation on how to do gene editing using CF as a model would be an interesting film for people. But it really was incredible. So if I sent him a note and copied you on the note and suggested he do that, and then he could follow through with you if he wanted to do it.
Yes, yes. And we also have some new categories this year in the industry awards. The industry awards are sort of like, you know, best sci-fi, best documentary, best depiction of a scientific principle, best technical advisor. We have all different categories. We have a new one this year that's best educational media, so it could qualify for that award as well.
Because there's a lot of really high-quality science and even space stuff going on. So, you know, you're going to have more material than you can deal with, I'm sure.
Excellent, yeah. We have about 85 official selections now, but we definitely want more, and There's also, you know, possibilities to stream the films online and other things that we can do. So we'd be happy to have all of those films. The presentation, we can go into the details when you email me, but it is possible for the PowerPoint presentation to be part of it because there is a section for educational media. So we can sort it out.
Here's a question from Todd, and he's in San Diego, not too far away, and he says, do you allow ample Q&A from the audience, given the speakers that you have planned? Will there be a chance to engage with them?
There will be chances to engage, though. It's so funny. We have a more than four-hour Academy Award-style program that night, and I literally have it blocked down to 30-second segments. People laugh, like if you sneeze, it's not part of the program. So, and amazingly, even these incredible speakers are as short as maybe 7 or 8 minute speeches. So there's not a lot of immediate Q&A. However, we're not the kind of festival where we block off our VIPs. You know, some places you go and those people are sort of like protected in a way. We love when people connect and learn from each other and kind of keep it real. So there is plenty of opportunity to walk around. We have a second floor exhibit hall in the theater where there will be immersive experiences and other things. There will be opportunity to engage them there. There is also, like I said, the VIP night on Friday night where you can join for cocktails and things like that. So there's definitely plenty of opportunity for that.
To go to the VIP, is it by invitation only or you just register and go?
No, you can just register and go. Like I said, it's really inexpensive. You can register and go. It's at a pretty great place called the University Club. Very small, intimate. You know, like I said, we keep it real.
Okay. And, you know, that's. It sounds like it's going to be very, very different from what it was last year.
Yeah.
So I have another one, another listener for you, this is Ben, Ben is actually in Berkeley, and he says, you're talking about a red carpet event, so, of course, when I hear red carpet event, I think of like a fashion show on the red carpet with all sorts of people talking to celebrities going into the event. Is that really what you're talking about? Are people going to be interviewed and contacted and somehow talked to going in? Are you looking for celebrities or noted people in the space industry? Or what actually is meant by a red carpet event?
So that is exactly what it is. There is a for real red carpet that goes out from the sidewalk up into the lobby. It's a very beautiful old theater, and there is a real red carpet that goes through. There is a press line. We do have paparazzi coming from the Hollywood industry.
Oh, come on. Do you really?
No, we do. We do. There's a step and repeat banner. There's like lights. Like you actually show up to it and people will interview, you know, people on it. And we're working on trying to get that broadcast this year because it would be great if scientists and people creating the science media get celebrated in our pop culture in that fashion. So we're actually working on potentially even having that red carpet broadcast this year. And, yes, so they will be, they interview, you know, those VIPs coming up. We'd love to have, like, we have a running list of VIPs, but we would love to have more people come and know about it and participate. So feel free to reach out directly or, you know, join that forum and make suggestions, but we would love to do that. So that's basically what the red carpet is. It's open all day, but there's a specific time chunk before the award ceremony starts where it's like the press line and all that kind of stuff.
And is it all black tie or just business attire, coat and tie, or what do you recommend? I mean, last year it was all over the board.
It is black tie. You do dress up, but it is, you know, a science and tech event, so people can be very creative about that. But it is a black tie event, and It's fancy.
You had lots of notables within the space community that were there last year. I mean, people that I know who have a name, they're well-known space authors, or they're this and that and the other, but the paparazzi would not know them. So is there some way for people like that to be identified by the paparazzi on the red carpet, like Janet Ivey, for example?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is.
Plus, you had lots and lots of authors, and I believe even Chris Carberry came from Explore Mars, and he was there. So we all know these people, and they do great work in the space community, but I don't know what Hollywood knows or doesn't know about them.
Well, we have, each year we have consistent representation from studios, like producers, filmmakers, writers that come from films. This year is no different. We have to kind of wait and see how some of the films play out in the theater before, you know, we arrange everything, but those people will be there. I can say that Dan Kamen is coming. He was the science envoy to the U.S. State Department. He's a Nobel Prize winner for his work in climate change. He has a nonprofit that he works with, Connie Nielsen, who played Wonder Woman's mom in Wonder Woman, and it's called the Human Needs Project. And so they're participating, but we won't be announcing the final list of those people until it gets closer to the time.
Are you able to tell us what the cost of registration is?
Yeah, it's really cheap. Let me pull that up if you give me 1 second.
Okay.
It is for like a full. We want to make sure that people can come and that everybody can enjoy the experience. So the full VIP grand package that includes the cocktail night, the film screening, the award ceremony, the workshop, the whole thing is $150. A full festival pass without the VIP part is $100. And just to come and show up at the film screening is $20. And the award ceremony is $30. So it's fairly affordable.
So there's no dinner or meal program or anything like that there?
We have hors d'oeuvres and drinks at various places throughout it, but because it's situated in downtown, there are a lot of restaurants like right nearby. So that's how we worked it out.
Ashley is in Salt Lake City and says, do you have an international flavor to your entries? Are people from overseas finding out about it and submitting their films, or is it mostly the United States?
That's a great question. Last year we had winning films from all over the world. We had winners from China, Russia, the Netherlands, France, Switzerland, just everywhere. And this year it's no different. It's the same. We have a great cross-section, so that's something we're proud of.
So this is kind of a hard question. Let's see how you do with it. For space cadets and space geeks that really like to think about rockets and, going to the moon or Mars and space settlements, a big issue in the space community and things of that nature, but they don't necessarily think about the arts. In fact, when I've talked about STEM versus STEAM, on the space show, the arts part of that can sometimes be really controversial depending on who's listening to a live show. Mm-hmm. So let's just assume we're talking about people that have easy reach to Santa Barbara. So I guess that'd be from Nevada all up and down the coast. Why would they want to come to a film festival? They may not associate that with how they're interested in space, which sort of always comes down to maybe technology or engineering or something, or even life support, for example.
Sure. I can give 3 examples off the top of the head. Number one is in terms of the space community and the types of things we are talking about there. And, it's real science that is very near-term future. And even those interstellar missions are, not very far off. So there's definitely world expertise there from NASA and from the ESSB community. Nancy Conrad, the wife of Pete Conrad, who was the 3rd man on the moon, she is coming and collaborating with us. She has amazing programs for young people, for students, that are like for the Conrad Challenge, where they compete with ideas for problem solving and making things. And then they help get patented and commercialized. And so it's a really incredible program, but it's sort of around the philosophy and principles of lunar colonization. And there is a moon village that's being created. I think people may have heard of that. There will be representation of that there. So it's that's important. And also, we are working out tours for some of the great stuff that's going on at UCSB and the surrounding area there in the labs, nanotechnology facilities, things like that. So if I were someone that was interested in the space industry, I think those things would compel me to go. And then the art and science part, there are two programs. One, Nancy's that I mentioned, she also has a very creative program for young people related to a museum that the people will learn about. And the second one is something called Voices of Humanity that the UCSB Deep Space Group, led by Philip Lumen, is working on. And Voices of Humanity, your question was about the arts and creativity and how you combine these things. Their lab is also working on this program, Voices of Humanity, where on this chip that's going to be sent to Alpha Centauri at nearly the speed of light by laser, and then there's some interim milestones on the way, they want everyone to feel part of it. So they're inviting poems, films, music, like any kind of creative expression will be put on the chip and sent to space. So that's another fun reason.
Is Dr. Lubin's lab going to be part of a tour?
Yes, they're actually partners. I should have listed off all of our awesome partners, but their lab is one of the partners for the festival, and they will be organizing a tour. And it's amazing. There's tardigrades on the tour.
there's what on the tour?
There are tardigrades.
I'm not getting it. Tardigrades?
Yeah, tardigrades, the little water bears that are like the most resilient organism on Earth that are resistant to radiation. You know, radiation doesn't damage their DNA, and they live in the most extreme environments on Earth, and they're the most likely organism to be able to survive interstellar travel in space.
Do they live in the ocean? Where do they live?
They live in they live everywhere. They live in the glaciers of Antarctica. They live in, you know, really extremely hot environments. They live just, I think, a lot of places.
I think they may live in my kitchen. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
When will these tours, like the tour with Dr. Lubin's lab, is that a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or how is that working? Do you know?
I believe that's going to be, we have to get the details of that ironed out, but it's either going to be a Saturday or a Sunday. Saturday is a film festival, but people can go away and do other things during it. It's fairly long, so we have to figure that out.
So the full package would include those tours to, like, Dr.
Oh, yeah.
Lubin's
mm-hmm.
lab. Well, that would be enough to seal it for me. So that is really, really amazing and really cool. So people, in kind of a summary, so if you have a film that you want to submit, you got to submit it by November 1st. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So the actual film data file, so you can see it, is by November 1st.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you're going to come up with your winners and all of that within a couple of weeks after that.
It will be the festival itself is on January 6th, and we will be announcing the winners closer to the January 6th time frame, but
So this is going to be a really cool thing. I have another logistics question from you. Alice is in Reno, Nevada, and says, can you give us some indication of what to expect weather-wise in Santa Barbara around that time of year? Is this typical Southern California warm weather? Does it get cold? I've never been there, but I'd like to attend. What can you tell us about Santa Barbara?
I don't know the exact weather pattern. I've been discussing it with the venue and local people. It can vary. It can easily be a very sunny, warm, typical Southern California day in that time frame. It can also be overcast and a little bit colder, but the area is never, like, really cold. So Best case scenario, it's a sunny, shiny, you know, quintessential California day. Worst case, maybe it rains a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit cold.
Yeah, it can get chilly, but it's not like where you are in January. That's for sure. Santa Barbara is a fun place as well. And in fact, they have great restaurants and other things to do. So you might even want to consider spending more time there. Because there's so much activities to do there. Get there a couple of days early if you can take the time off. And it would be a really nice trip for you to be at Santa Barbara. Now, one other thing. Do you know if there are any planned rocket launches from Vandenberg that people might get a treat and see while there?
I don't. Do you know?
Have you forgotten to check on that?
I have forgotten to check. I forgot that I was, like, right there.
So you can, as soon as the rocket, on a clear day, as soon as the rocket breaks the horizon, you can easily see it from Goleta and Santa Barbara. I mean, easily.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And if you actually wanted to drive up to where Vandenberg is, only about 2-hour drive, and there are places to park publicly, but, again, you wouldn't see the launch. You would see it as soon as it breaks the horizon line. I get the notices all the time, and very few can I see from San Francisco because they usually get fogged in. But my son sees them in Southern California fairly often, and when he was a student at UCSB, I'd tell him when something was going to go, and probably he could see 70% of them depending on the time of day or the time of evening. But that's a real treat because people may not have ever seen a big rocket launch. And they can maybe see it if they, you know, just go a little someplace where it might get away from some of the city lights, or you'll see it streaking across the sky. So you might look at Vandenberg and their launch schedule and see if they have any Falcon 9s or Atlas 5s or something scheduled for around the time, and people can run outside and see it streaking overhead.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And what would be pretty amazing, also, we can't make an announcement on this yet, but you asked earlier about some potential guests, so I'll leave it vague, but maybe figure-outable. We think we're going to have some actors represented from the original 2001 Space Odyssey film. So that would be really, really fun, and I can just imagine that if there's an actual rocket launch, which likely has a satellite attached to it, that's kind of a surreal experience.
If you want, the next time I get the guy's newsletter who documents all the Vandenberg launches, I'll forward it to you, and you can subscribe to it if you want. It's a free email list, and he sends out every rocket launch from Vandenberg, even the national security launches, although you can't get on the base or anything like that to see them. But you would know what's coming up. Even better than what's on the Vandenberg website.
Yeah. I should also point out that for people that don't come to the site itself, we are organizing remote sites to play the films and live stream the award ceremony. So there's a couple of locations. Like, I think we may be doing one in Missouri, potentially one in the Netherlands, where people are just getting a theater, and we're going to provide them the digital assets, and they just need to have a internet connection and screen and host their own remote site. So we're, you know, if people have an interest in doing that aren't coming to ours, we would be happy to work with them for that as well.
So you're not live streaming to individuals who can watch it in their living room. You're talking about a theater event that would get the live stream and people would go to the theater to watch it.
Yeah, we are planning on live streaming portions of it from the internet to anyone, but there will be elements of it that you can only interact with in a theater. So so if people are interested in hosting one or have a community that they think would appreciate that, we would love to collaborate with them.
And so for that, they would contact you through the contact page of the website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would be any place on the planet they wanted to do that, right?
Yep.
Very, very cool. Do you go, on speaking tours to promote the Raw Science Film Festival? Do you travel around the country? It's like a book tour, like Barnes and Noble and places like that, to promote this?
Yeah, I do. And one of the best places that I've gone is InspireFest in Dublin, Ireland. And they have a really incredible festival. I've been to a lot of conferences and events, but theirs really is unique, and it is about incorporating art into science and technology. And it is, you know, to use a cliche word, but it really is very inspirational. And I just attended there the first time this past July. I'll be speaking there again in June. I think I'll be in Oregon in March. I'll be in New York next week. So, yeah, I go around and talk about it.
What's the name of the event in Ireland again, in Dublin?
It's called InspireFest. And actually, Anne O'Day, who founded it, she founded also the top-ranked tech publication blog in Ireland called Silicon Republic. And she founded both events. She'll be coming to the festival as well and speaking there, too, at Raw Science Film Festival. But they're really good, InspireFest.
So I ask you that because my other son and his wife, who is Irish, just got back from Dublin. And they go fairly often, and I'm going to tell him about all of this, and he should look into it.
Oh, yeah. And actually, that Anne O'Day and InspireFest, that is why we were able to get the Nokia Bell Labs Fellowship for youth that win the Raw Science Film Festival, because they were there at InspireFest, and I wouldn't have learned about this program otherwise. And there are just so many stories that Anne has. She wishes she could make a collection of them, and she may do that, because there's just so many stories like that where people go and make, you know, and collaborate and do wonderful things afterwards. So that was a success thing for me. I was really excited that we could do that for youth winners.
He should meet her. He's doing a DeLorean documentary about John DeLorean and the documentary, and there was some science and engineering involved in that, and he's been going back and forth to Ireland on that for quite a while. So this might be an interesting person for him to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Both of her organizations are really, truly kind of innovative and really impressive.
Are you finding, let me do it this way. People come on the space show, either guests, sometimes they're guests, sometimes they're callers to the program, and they talk about the poor quality of science education with students and the general population here in the United States. So this is strictly limited to the U.S. I don't know what the quality is elsewhere. So are you finding, as you travel around and talk this up and do this year after year, are you finding science education quality problems in among students and in this country? Do you see red flags at all, or what do you see?
I do. There are a lot of people doing great new work, and there are a lot of communities that are suffering from, you know, old methodologies. And I think a lot of places in the U.S. and globally can benefit from incorporating art and storytelling better in the educational system. We have, I can give a couple examples, but like Fraunhofer MAVIS is a part of the Fraunhofer Institute in Germany. It's a large, like, imaging and other work institute. They are coming and giving a workshop on how to use, they're going to do like a train the trainer on one of their programs where they use raw biomedical data and teach students make art with the data, but they're also learning what the data represents. So there's lots of like neat things that I hope that this will be attractive. The workshops event will be attractive to educators and people that can bring it to their communities, because and even at UCSB, their photonics group has just amazing projects where they outreach into the community. And I think that this is an area that we could definitely improve in the U.S. and we can improve globally. And I think that it's sort of, again, a cliched example, but what Steve Jobs did with computers, he brought art and design into computing, and that's what brought, you know, the power to people to be able to express themselves and also to kind of fulfill their own potential, was having the ability to understand and use a computer. And he used art and, user interface and design to be able to do that. And I think the same thing needs to be done for education.
So you see room for lots of improvement, I guess one could say that, right?
Yeah, yes.
Now, is that with the student population, the general population, or both?
I think both. One of the things that we hope to do with the channel and the festival is to promote and engage people with scientific thought and show why is it beautiful and why is it important and like how you even do it. Have science, you know, like autonomous, like scientific thought. And I think that's a big gap in adults. It's a gap in children. It's important to address it at all levels of our society, for all people.
I have what may be our last question for today, listeners, given that we're on the 60-minute forecast. So Larry's in Boston, and he said, I'm curious if you have any kind of programming or films along these lines. David recently had Esther Dyson on the show, and Esther Dyson is part of the organization 23andMe that does DNA testing for individuals, which is all incredible science, and then the individuals get the result, although they don't get anything that sort of explains the science behind those results. I'm wondering if anything like 23andMe or anyone doing this kind of commercial science work in genetics has ever put forth a film or a documentary that breaks it down so that when it gets to the user, the user actually knows what happened in order to get those results? Or am I reaching for something that isn't generally given to consumers?
I think that is a fantastic point and idea, and I'm not sure if that exists or not yet. It's something I've actually been inquiring about myself because there really is a gap in knowledge. Like all of these high-tech, you know, especially, like you said, DNA sequencing, one, there's a gap in scientific knowledge about what we can do with the data, but there's certainly a gap with the consumer. And both need to be bridged, and obviously it's the scientific process that bridges the first, but we don't really have a clear method to bridge the second yet. So thanks for bringing up that point. I have not looked into if they have existing media. If not, I certainly hope something is created.
So I used 23andMe long before I knew Esther was part of it. And I did talk to her about it on the show, but when I got the reports back, there's absolutely nothing that explains to the consumer how any of this was derived or why it was derived or how it was done. They mentioned things like DNA and they mentioned buzzwords, but you know, the consumer has no idea what goes on in the background. So I asked Esther if 23andMe would do this for my dog. I mean, this may sound really far-fetched. Okay, and she told me there's a group that does this for dogs. Okay, so the group.
So
I looked it up, and she told me she thought it was 39andMe because a dog has 39 pairs of chromosomes. But it's actually called Embark, E-M-B-A-R-K, and I'm stupid enough to do it. I've been corresponding with the company, and again, the consumer gets concluded data, you know, but they have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. And I think a lot of us would be really interested to know what went on behind the scenes. I'd love to have them a short movie that's on their website or whatever that shows the process of how they're taking the dog's DNA or my DNA and spitting out this end result with 180 diseases or whatever, you know, they can predict or project or whatever. And I think it's I think it's really bad that they're not giving us the background of all of this, because I think, number one, we could comprehend it relatively without a lot of difficulty. And I think many of us would find it really interesting, and I think it would go a long way into turning people on with science and some of this research.
Yeah, I think obviously 23andMe and these other sequencing initiatives are really, it's like, you know, DIY biohacking finally comes to fruition where people can be their own doctors and can understand better about who they are and what they are and what how they can, you know, manage themselves. And it seems like that would be a very important thing. I know there are gaps. Like I would, but there is also a lot of research coming out currently that it just seems would be extraordinarily important for people. Like I've read studies where they have been scientists have been able to tie like a person's susceptibility to obesity by drinking sodas to some specific genes, and then you know people can make better choices about their diet based on their own genetics. And some of those things are farther away, but you know some data is already conclusive. And I just think that is a really important opportunity, and I would love to see that as well.
Well, I don't drink sodas, and I'm still overweight, so screw that data. So. The other example of this is GPS. So when you ask people, you know, how their car is unlocked, when they say, I locked the keys in it, and they call whatever, and they unlock their car, because it's got that feature in it where they can do it, or where they're getting the data from GPS, and they say, well, it comes from Garmin or the device in my car, and they don't have any clue, you know, that it, where it's coming from or how the signal is done. I think that's unfortunately a shortfall in the potential of our education as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But we're at the hour point. Is there anything we should have talked about for this year's film festival that we have overlooked or that you want to make sure we know about?
Not that I can think of offhand. I think those are the most, those are the key things. And it is definitely a year for growth for us. And we hope that we put together something that people will really enjoy.
I'm sure we will. And I will be following the website and we'll let people know when some of these items are up and running that you talked about. And I plan on being there and I will look forward to seeing you again the first week of January.
Thank you very much.
As always, listener, that's it for today. Look at our newsletters and our schedules for the coming week. Actually, the phone's ringing. Do you want to take an extra call? Do you,
sure,
do you have time?
Yeah. I have time.
Okay, let's see. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Doug from Southern California.
Hi, you got in by the nick of the bell, so to speak, Doug. So Carrie is still with us, so go ahead, please.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't realize it was heading to the end until you said it, so I apologize. Carrie, I understand that you an interest of yours is dance. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Have you looked at what sort of dance would be possible in 1/6 or 3/8 gravity? Because I can imagine it could be quite different.
Yes, I have thought about that. I don't know exactly what can be done, but I would imagine that there would be, you know, a need to definitely have, like a lot of dance is partnership, you know, where it's called a pas de deux, where you're dancing with someone else, and obviously there's no gravity, so throwing someone in the air may not, you know, would not be the thing in space. But I imagine that there's, maybe it'd be more like rhythmic gymnastics where you could, you know, do more things that relate to a centrifugal force or turning. I don't know. I'd be very curious to see what it would be like.
But, you know, because I think you could spin around at sort of the same rate as on Earth, but since you could be in the air for longer, you could do some remarkable things that way. Plus, also, one partner would be just much more able to lift up another partner. That can't be done on Earth.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of beautiful, there would be a lot of beautiful choreography that could be done in space.
Do you think it would be slower? The moves would be slower than on Earth.
I don't think they would necessarily be slower. I think they might be faster because I don't know how the bones and muscles actually adapt to space. So it's not an educated guess, but at least on Earth. A lot of things do depend on gravity, and you get fatigued a lot easier because, you know, just for example, like kicking the leg up into the air, it takes a lot of strength and control to be able to do that. And on Earth, we even do that very rapidly, repetitively, and it can be tiring. And I imagine that in zero gravity, that there would be less, that it wouldn't be as tiring because we wouldn't be fighting gravity. So the movements could be probably, you know, faster, probably more repetitive.
Yeah. Do you think that would be possible, like using tethers to sort of, on Earth, suspending 5/6 of your weight, that one could be able to experiment and figure out what moves are possible?
I do, yeah. I do think so.
Yeah. I mean, that almost sounds like a research project for a dance student to work on.
Absolutely.
Think how high you could be thrown in Mars or lunar gravity, or how fast you could spin, or how far in a distance you could be thrown. But you'd have a whole new aerodynamic to being thrown by a male dance partner.
Yeah, and I can say, you know, not just, I can speak for others, other dancers, not just myself. This is something that dancers do dream about. Like, you spend all day training, in some cases 8 hours a day training or performing. And I mean, I know I had dreams at night, and I'm sure kids today and, you know, fellow dancers dream at night that gravity is not, they're not bound by gravity.
I could imagine, just, you know, with a single arm, you could lift up the partner up above your head pretty easily.
Did you think of not being bound by gravity, Carrie?
Oh yeah, I dreamt that at night. I would spend all day, you know, bound by gravity rehearsing, and at night I would dream that I was not bound by gravity.
Yeah, I never dreamed that. David, did you dream anything like that?
No, but I can't keep time with rhythm, so I'm not one that you want to dance. When I took piano and violin lessons, I had a metronome, and the damn teacher, this is back in the days when they'd slap your hands with rulers, that today would, of course, be considered abuse, and they'd go to jail. But, damn it, David, you're not keeping time with the metronome. Blam, blam. And I can tell you that it didn't work, because I still have a very hard time keeping time with rhythm, unless the music is really, really pronounced and it's impossible to miss the rhythm, then I do okay. So no, I did not think of being unbound by gravity. That was never one of my fantasy dreams. I had other fantasy dreams, but
as you said, though, I bet there are students out there that would appreciate, you know, thinking about that, because I mean, just as an example, if you're jumping, and then there's a move called entrechat, where you step up the cat, where you jump up and like beat your feet, and it's a competition with oneself to figure out how many times can that happen before you land back on the ground. So certainly when students go home at night, it's like you're just dreaming that you jump up and you don't come down, and you can do that as many times as you want. So I bet your idea is a really beautiful one to let students figure out how they might be able to do that.
I've actually met with a faculty member at University of Arizona Tucson School of Dance, and apparently there's like a student who's a double major, space studies and in dance. So I think it'd be cool to bring in a physicist, the faculty, and that student, and just sort of discuss what's possible. And then from a practical standpoint, how could you actually practice something like this? Because we're obviously not in that environment.
Well, you know, there have been some really great TV commercials for drinks of different kinds, including I think Bailey's Cream was one of them, where they did like the zero gravity bar and some other things, and the people were floating and kind of dancing in the bar and stuff like that. So there have been some really good commercials that have simulated that to sell a different product. You could probably look up the commercial zero gravity bar. Now they're not dancing, but they're floating pretty cool in zero gravity. So you might be able to simulate a dance routine in zero gravity with special effects. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, there's a sponsoring partner of ours called Space Games Federation. You can find them spacegamesfederation.com, and they are sports in space, and I think they're officially sanctioned to do sports in zero G. It's like I don't know exactly how that works, but they have that, and so they call them astroleaps, the people that will be like coming up with games in space, and they have a competition for it. And the way they one of the parts of their training programs is iFly, IFLY. It's like where there's like a wind tunnel coming from below, and it's actually
right.
like a Yeah. Have you heard of iPlay?
No, I've never heard of it. I should put them on the space show.
Yeah, yeah. There's like a whole competition, and it is like ballet or gymnastics in space. And it's done with this wind that comes from underneath, so that might be a way to practice it.
Are they going to be at the film festival where I can meet them?
We would love to be getting an iFly thing there. I'm not sure if we'll be able to get one, but we're going to try.
Okay. Otherwise, I'll ask you for an introduction later on, but I'd love to. That'd be a fun thing to introduce and talk on the space show about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You would like Linda Reinstein is the founder of Space Games Federation, and she's got a lot of experience with that. In fact, one of her one of the people involved with her initiative is Brock Vereen. He was an NFL professional NFL player, so it's his brother Sean Vereen, and he has done iFly.
Okay.
Yeah, there's an iFly near where I live, and I took a friend of mine for his before his wedding to do that. So it was a lot of fun. And what's really cool is you can just go into the iFly places, and they will have their like instructors that in between when they're serving customers, the instructors are just using this thing, just doing amazing maneuvers. And I can imagine you could, they're able to set a course of fan at whatever speed they want. So I could imagine setting it to where you're still standing on the ground, but it's lifting up 5/6 of your weight. And so you can actually practice this sort of thing. Good idea.
Cool. Anything else, Doug?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Doug, are you going to make it to Santa Barbara for the film festival?
I need to, of course, obviously, it's the work schedule is the issue.
Well, hopefully you will. I'll be there. It'd be good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Doug.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for staying later than the hour-long segment. lots to look forward to in early January in Santa Barbara. And listeners, if you're not that familiar with it, it's about a two-hour drive from Los Angeles, depending on traffic. About a six-plus-hour drive from San Francisco, depending on traffic and weather. And y'all ought to go. I loved it last year and can't wait to go back this year. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much.
And we will stay in touch, and I will hopefully talk to you soon. And keep us posted if there's any developments. We'll bring them back up to the space show, or at least mention them and promote it on the air, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Listeners, okay. That's it. Check out our upcoming show schedule on the newsletter and everything for next week. And we look forward to a good week with all of you listening and calling us. Goodbye from Carrie. Goodbye from David and the space show.